I want you to picture exactly where you are right now. Like, really visualize it. Today is August 26, 2026.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah. You're sitting on your couch, you've got your controller in your hands, and you've just decided to finally pull the trigger on that massive, you know, highly anticipated AAA game you've been waiting years for.
The one that kept getting delayed, right?
Exactly. So you navigate over to the digital storefront. You see the price tag, which is $70, maybe even $100 if you're springing for the Ultimate Edition, and you hit purchase.
You know, a pretty standard Tuesday for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah. You watch the progress bar fill up. Now, let me ask you a very simple but suddenly terrifying question. Who actually owns that game?
It feels like kind of an absurd question to even ask, doesn't it?
It really does.
I mean, you paid for it. The money clearly left your bank account. The icon is sitting right there on your home screen. Our entire economic intuition tells us that, well, a transaction has occurred and property has been securely exchanged.
Right. But today, we are ripping the bandage off that illusion completely.
Yeah, it's about time.
We've got our hands on a fascinating, just definitive investigative dossier from Taking Game Media today. It's titled The Digital Ownership Crisis. And I have to say, it completely shatters the myth of digital property.
It's a sobering read for sure.
It really is. So our goal for this deep dive is simple. We're going to figure out exactly how we got legally stripped of our games behind our backs, understand the shockwaves currently hitting PlayStation 5 owners, and more importantly, learn how you can build a digital library that no CEO can take away from you.
Because the very foundation of how we consume interactive art has just fundamentally shifted.
Yeah, completely.
And we need to look far beyond the sensational headlines today. We are going to dissect the structural economics, the platform monopolies, and, you know, the specific legal architecture driving this change.
The nuts and bolts of it.
Exactly. Because what is happening right now isn't some accidental glitch in the matrix. It is the system working exactly as it was engineered to by these multinational tech conglomerates.
So let's start with the immediate catalyst for this entire crisis. The thing that woke everyone up. Just this month, August 2026, Sony quietly updated its checkout flow on the PlayStation Network.
Very quietly.
Oh, super quietly. For over a decade, you'd go to the store and the button would just say, buy now. Right. It's familiar. It's comforting.
We're all conditioned to look for it.
Yeah. But suddenly, players noticed that terminology just vanished. Instead, they were hit with explicit, unvarnished legal qualifiers. That button now essentially says acquire license.
Quite a pivot from buy now.
It is. And it's accompanied by this mandatory terms of service pop-up reminding you that you are absolutely not purchasing ownership of that software. You are acquiring a personal, revocable, non-exclusive license.
And it is crucial to understand why Sony made this change right now.
Right, the timing.
Exactly. Because it certainly wasn't a sudden burst of corporate benevolence or transparency. It was forced compliance.
They didn't have a choice.
None at all. Specifically, this is the direct result of California's landmark Assembly Bill 2426, combined with sweeping new consumer protection mandates over in the European Union.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. These legislative bodies finally looked at the digital storefronts, and not just Sony. I mean, Steam, Apple, Amazon, and said you cannot use deceptive promotional phrasing like buy if the consumer isn't actually receiving permanent property rights.
Oh, that makes total sense.
Yeah, they banned the practice outright. If you don't own it, you can't say buy.
Which means we really have to talk about the death of the first sale doctrine.
A huge foundational concept.
Yeah, because in the physical world, if I buy a physical book or a DVD or, you know, a game on a plastic disc, that doctrine guarantees I own that specific physical copy.
The copyright owner got their money, and their control over that physical object is exhausted.
Exactly. I can resell it at a yard sale. I can lend it to my best friend. I can even write it into my will and pass it down to my kids.
You can do whatever you want with it.
But with these digital licenses, all of that is strictly prohibited.
Entirely.
You can't resell it. You can't transfer it. And when you pass away, your entire digital library legally evaporates.
Okay, let's unpack this because, wait. So if a user simply gets into a terms of service dispute, or maybe their account is flagged by some overly aggressive automated moderation bot, they permanently forfeit access to thousands of dollars of accumulated software.
That is the reality.
There's no financial recourse at all.
None. That is the brutal reality of the ecosystem we've allowed them to build. Because these are what the legal world calls non-negotiable adhesion contracts.
Adhesion contracts.
Right. You don't get to sit down with Sony's legal team and negotiate the terms of your $70 purchase. You either click I agree or you don't play the game.
Take it or leave it.
Exactly. And baked into the DNA of those adhesion contracts are unilateral termination rights.
Hold on. I mean, this sounds completely illegal. If I buy a physical lawnmower, John Deere can't sneak into my garage in the middle of the night and take it back just because I violated some arbitrary terms of service.
That's a great analogy, actually.
How on earth have tech companies gotten away with this in court for this long?
Well, it comes down to how software was historically distributed. In the early days, software was so easily duplicated that courts allowed companies to wrap it in licensing agreements to prevent mass piracy.
Okay, sure. To stop people from just burning CDs for all their friends.
Right. The courts presumed that clicking I agree meant you gave informed consent to those terms. The lawnmower is a physical good, but the game code is intellectual property.
I see.
But here's where the tide is turning. These new statutory developments in California and the EU are establishing a new precedent, which is that embedding forfeiture clauses into consumer software agreements without explicit clear warnings is an unconscionable business practice.
Because it fails basic transparency.
Precisely.
Because, I mean, reading a dense end-user license agreement, a ULA, is one thing. It's just a wall of text on a screen that everyone scrolls past.
Right. Nobody reads them.
We just hit accept. It's easy to think, oh, they'd never actually do that to paying customers. It's just legal cover.
A theoretical threat.
Yeah. But the dossier makes a hard pivot here from legal theory to the real-world execution of these clauses, the precedent of erasure.
Let's talk about Ubisoft and what they did to the crew.
Yes. April 2024. This was a massive watershed moment for consumer rights in the digital age.
A huge deal.
So, The Crew was a highly successful open-world racing title, but when Ubisoft decided it was no longer financially viable to keep the central multiplayer servers running, they didn't just turn off the online matchmaking and leave the single-player game intact for people to enjoy offline.
No, they didn't, and this is the part that is genuinely chilling. They actively revoked the digital licenses from user accounts entirely.
Reached right in and took them.
They reached into Steam libraries, they reached into PlayStation accounts, and they permanently locked and erased the game from the accounts of legitimate paying customers.
It's staggering when you really think about it.
It is. But here's the detail that truly blew my mind, the thing I couldn't believe. Even players who owned the physical plastic optical discs of the crew were completely locked out.
Yep. You'd put the disc in the console drive and you'd encounter mandatory server error screens.
And we have to explain how that is even technically possible. Modern physical discs often don't contain the full executable game data anymore.
Right. They're basically hollow.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're essentially physical license keys. When you put the disc in, the console still pings the publisher's server to validate the license and download the rest of the game. So when Ubisoft killed the server, they essentially bricked the physical media.
It became a coaster.
Just a piece of plastic. What's fascinating here is that this wasn't just an isolated technical glitch. It was the first industrialized, deliberate execution of a major video game by its own publisher.
The first execution. Wow.
Yeah. It proved unequivocally that consumer investment anxiety, you know, that nagging fear that your digital library could vanish overnight, is based on empirical fact, not paranoia.
And Sony has their own skeletons in this exact same closet. The dossier points out the 2022 and 2023 content purges.
Oh, yes. The video purges.
Yeah. Sony permanently removed hundreds of purchased movies and TV shows from Studio Canal and Warner Brothers from European user accounts, simply because the back-end licensing agreements between Sony and those studios expired.
The users had absolutely no say in it?
None. Poof. Gone. And no financial refunds were issued to the users either. We've also seen massive conflicts with PlayStation Plus Extra.
Yes, the licensing override issue.
Exactly. Let me get this straight. A user buys a game during a holiday sale.
Right.
A year later, that same game rotates onto the PS Plus subscription service.
Which they are also paying for.
Right. The user downloads it to play again, and the system accidentally overwrites their permanent purchase license with a temporary subscription license.
Which is a catastrophic back-end error.
Truly. So when the game rotates out of the service, the user is locked out of an asset they paid full price for originally.
Unbelievable.
There is a quote in the source material from senior investigative journalist Laurie Kate Dale that just nails how vulnerable you are. She says, "We are no longer consumers. We are financial hostages whose investments are held at the mercy of corporate balance sheets."
It's a stark way to put it, but economically, she is entirely accurate. And if we follow the money, the reality gets even more frustrating for the player.
Oh, I'm sure.
Think about it. If consumers are receiving significantly fewer rights, no ownership, no resale value, no inheritance, and the constant threat of erasure, then basic market logic dictates we must be paying a lower rental kind of price for the product, correct?
You would absolutely think so. I mean, I don't own it, so give me the discount. But no, the financial forensics in this report are staggering.
And profit margins are wild.
They really are. The transition to digital distribution expanded publisher operating margins by over 60% per unit. Think about traditional retail for a second. Out of a $70 game, roughly $20 to $25 went to the physical reality of the product.
The actual atom-based costs.
Right. Disc stamping, manufacturing the plastic cases, printing the cover art, putting them on freight ships, shipping them in trucks across the country, and paying the retailer's cut at the big box store. In the digital space, every single one of those overhead costs evaporates into thin air.
Completely evaporates. The revenue is concentrated entirely between the platform holder like Sony, Valve, or Microsoft, and the publisher.
Just split right down the middle, or however they divide it.
Exactly. But rather than passing those massive logistics savings down to you, the player, through lower price points, they kept the $70 and, in some cases, $100 price tags.
Of course they did.
Plus, they completely eliminated the secondary resale market, meaning you can't trade your game in to recoup costs. And they just sat back and watched their net digital margin surge from roughly 55% to over 85% per unit sold.
It's like a luxury restaurant figuring out how to make you cook and serve the food yourself.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Right. But they still charge you the full premium menu price. And to top it off, they won't even let you take the leftovers home.
Yeah, you're locked in.
You're doing all the heavy lifting of hosting the data on your own hard drive. You're paying for your own internet bandwidth to download it. And they're reaping all the windfall.
That's a highly accurate, if slightly painful, way to visualize the economic disconnect here.
Yeah.
And we have to be clear. This isn't just a Sony problem.
No, it's industry-wide.
If we compare the major platforms, we see a totally unified front. Steam, which is operated by Valve, functions on a subscriber agreement license with tightly integrated DRM. That's digital rights management.
Right.
Xbox enforces a conditional software license. Nintendo has a strict proprietary license. And honestly, they already have a history of entirely closing down legacy storefronts like the Wii U and 3DS, leaving digital buyers completely stranded.
Yeah, a lot of people lost games there.
They all enforce these identical revocable license structures.
But there is one shining exception mentioned in the dossier. GOG.com, operated by CD Projekt.
Yes. GOG stands entirely apart in the industry right now. They are the sole mainstream digital storefront that truly sells you a video game.
Sells it, in quotes.
Exactly. They provide true DRM-free offline installation binaries.
Okay, for the non-programmers listening, explain what an offline installation binary actually means in practice.
Basically, when you buy a game from GOG, you download a standalone file, a complete independent package. It functions permanently on your hardware without any server dependency whatsoever.
No internet required.
It doesn't check in with a mothership to verify your license, and it doesn't require an internet connection to boot up. If GOG's servers went dark tomorrow, or if they went bankrupt, your games would continue to work flawlessly forever because you possess the actual software, not just a permission slip.
Which is exactly how physical media used to work. And listeners right now might be thinking, okay, this digital landscape sounds like an absolute nightmare, so my simple solution is to just keep buying physical discs.
The logical workaround.
Right, I'll just stick to optical media and avoid this whole mess entirely. But the dossier shifts here to explain how hardware manufacturers are systematically dismantling that escape route, too. They are building a hardware trap.
The statistics paint a very clear picture of this trap closing, yeah. By 2026, the digital market share of global console game sales hit a staggering 88%.
88%?
Yes. And as a direct consequence of that massive shift in consumer behavior, global optical disc pressing capacity, the actual physical factories making the discs, has plunged by 62%.
So the infrastructure is just dying.
The infrastructure to support physical media is being quietly, methodically dismantled.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though, because it's not just passive market forces at play. It's deliberate anti-consumer engineering.
Absolute.
Look at the PlayStation 5 Slim. When it was announced, it introduced a modular, detachable physical disc drive. Sounds great, right? Gives the consumer choice.
It sounded like a win.
But to actually use it, That physical disk drive requires an initial internet connection to perform a digital handshake with Sony servers just to pair the motherboard to the drive.
And we should explain the mechanics of that handshake. Sony argues this is a security measure to prevent piracy and ensure the drive is an official component.
Of course they do.
But practically, it means the console has to ask a remote server for permission to let you use a piece of plastic you bought.
It's wild.
If those authentication servers ever go down, or if Sony simply decides to turn them off in 10 years to save costs, that physical disk drive becomes an inert brick. It is disabled by design.
So even the physical hardware is tethered to the cloud now.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you begin to see the end game here. We are looking at an impending digital-only monopoly.
Which is terrifying.
There are pervasive industry rumors, heavily highlighted in the NAD dossier, that massive generational titles like Grand Theft Auto VI could push for digital-only releases.
Oh man, imagine that.
If a platform achieves a completely diskless ecosystem, they wield absolute pricing control. They can enforce unchecked $80 or $90 price floors because you have zero alternatives.
Right, you can't go to a used game store, you can't borrow it from a friend.
You pay what they say. Plus, tying offline single-player games to periodic cloud DRM handshakes means that your ability to access interactive art is now entirely subordinate to corporate accounting.
Which leads to what the dossier calls a cultural catastrophe. This isn't just about our wallets being squeezed, it's about our history.
Our shared cultural history, yes.
The Video Game History Foundation published a terrifying statistic. 87% of classic video games produced before 2010 are currently out of print and critically endangered.
87%. That's almost everything.
87%. Frank Cifaldi, the executive director there, says destroying access to an interactive work is no different than torching manuscripts in an ancient library.
It is cultural erasure on an industrial scale. When games exist exclusively as revocable cloud licenses on servers that cost money to maintain, the moment a game stops being highly profitable, the servers are shut down, and the art vanishes.
It's just gone.
We lose the defining cultural artifacts of modern civilization simply because keeping them alive doesn't benefit a quarterly earnings report.
It's incredibly bleak. But thankfully, this dossier isn't just a eulogy for ownership, it's a call to action.
It gives some hope.
It does. The conversation in the final section pivots to empowerment because gamers aren't just taking this lying down. How is the community fighting back against this? And what can you, the listener, do right now? Because the resistance is gaining serious momentum.
The backlash has been highly organized. The most immediate visceral response was the global PS blackout boycott.
Yeah, I saw that trending everywhere.
Consumers actively canceling their subscription tiers, halting all digital software purchases, and hitting platform holders in the only metric they actually respect revenue.
Speaking with their wallets.
But more importantly, the resistance is moving into the legislative sphere. The European Citizens Initiative, which is titled Stop Destroying Video Games, has successfully amassed over 1 million validated signatures across EU member states.
1 million signatures is massive. That actually compels the European Parliament to formally look at binding legislation.
It forces them to the table.
And their demands are incredibly specific and smart. They aren't just vaguely saying, you know, be nicer to us. They are demanding laws that outlaw always online DRM for single player games.
A huge first step.
They are demanding that if a company wants to terminate official support for a multiplayer game, they must, by law, release open source server binaries. Which basically means forcing the company to hand the community the keys to the server software so fans can keep the multiplayer alive on their own computers.
Precisely. And they want statutory regulatory penalties for unlawful license terminations. We're talking fines up to 4% of a company's annual global turnover, similar to GDPR violations.
Oh, that would hurt.
It's a robust legislative framework that would permanently shift the balance of power back to the consumer.
But, you know, legislation moves at a glacial pace. In the interim, consumers need to adopt defensive postures.
We have to protect ourselves today.
Exactly. The dossier outlines a strategic consumer playbook, a set of technical and financial methodologies to protect your library right now. So, what does this all mean for the listener today? Walk us through this playbook.
First, prioritize complete on-disk verification. If you buy a physical edition, don't just assume the game is on there.
Right, because of what we talked about earlier.
Ensure through community resources, like the Does It Play project, that 100% of the playable data is actually stamped on the disk. And it isn't just an installer file that forces a massive digital download.
That's a great tip.
Second, aggressively patronize DRM-free ecosystems like GOG.com, where you are granted permanent offline installers.
Right. You literally download the file, put it on an external hard drive, and put it in your desk drawer. It is yours, immune to server shutdowns.
Exactly. Third, and this is regarding your financial exposure, keep your digital wallet balances at absolute zero.
Wait, really? Zero?
Yes. Do not preload your PlayStation or Steam account with digital gift cards. If your account ever enters into a dispute or gets flagged by an algorithm, any funds sitting in that wallet are instantly frozen and likely lost forever.
Good to know. Don't give them an interest-free loan that they can confiscate.
Exactly. And finally, robust security. Enable hardware token two-factor authentication.
Not just the text messages.
Right. Do not rely on SMS text messages, which are highly vulnerable to SIM swapping attacks. Use an authenticator app or a physical USB security key to preclude account theft. Because the harsh reality is that platforms will often refuse to restore stolen digital assets, claiming you violated the security terms.
Wow. This raises an important question, doesn't it? If they make it this hard to protect what we buy, why should we trust them at all?
This raises an immensely important question regarding the future of public trust in the digital economy as a whole. Professor Eric Goldman, an intellectual property law specialist quoted in the dossier, makes a profound point.
What does he say?
He says property rights are the cornerstone of free markets. If technology conglomerates are allowed to quietly strip away consumer rights simply by redefining the semantics of a transaction, literally changing the word buy to license, then public trust in the entire digital economy will eventually disintegrate.
People will just opt out.
You can only squeeze the consumer so far before they stop playing the game.
It's a house of cards. So, to synthesize this whole journey we've been on, Sony's transparent disclosure at checkout didn't actually create this crisis. They just ripped the mask off the industry and showed us the truth.
They said the quiet part out loud.
They really did. We are standing squarely at a crossroads between permanent digital tenancy, where we rent our culture by the month, and authentic digital ownership.
The mechanics of the software industry have entirely outpaced our legal frameworks, and right now, consumers are bearing the entirety of that risk.
I want to leave you with one final lingering thought to mull over when you look at your own gaming setup tonight. We talked about the cultural erasure of the past, but think about the future. If our generation's interactive history, the masterpieces that defined our culture, our storytelling, our shared experiences, is entirely tethered to corporate authentication servers that will inevitably 100% be decommissioned one day.
Because servers don't run forever.
Exactly. What happens to those works a century from now? Will the digital museums of the future just be filled with empty encrypted files sitting on dead hard drives that no one anywhere has the keys to unlock? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the digital ownership crisis. Take a very close, highly critical look at your own digital libraries today.